America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And happy Friday, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. What a beautiful day it is. And we will start our day today, as we always do on Friday, with Senator Bernie Sanders. He is neither a Republican nor a Democrat, the independent from Vermont in the United States Senate. His website, Bernie, you just choked me up. Just think
about Sanders. Sanders.senate.gov.
There you go. Thank you. Chewing on the tail end of a poppy seed muffin Louise gave me here, so I guess I'll fail a drug test if I... In any case, Bernie Sanders is with us. Senator Sanders, welcome.
Tom, very good to be with you.
Al Gore just won the, or co-won, along with the IPCC, the Nobel Peace Prize. It is fueling lots of speculation about what it's going to do to the Democratic presidential race. But without getting into the partisan politics of it, just the fact that he won the Nobel Peace Prize for this issue of global warming is a big deal.
It is a big deal, and he deserves it, as does the IPCC. I am on both the Environmental Committee, chaired by Barbara Boxer in the Senate, as well as the Energy Committee, chaired by Jeff Bingaman. And we have, in the Environmental Committee, heard testimony from Gore. We have dealt with the IPCC, and these people are playing an extraordinarily good role in basically telling our country and the entire world that if we do not get our act together with regard to global warming, there will be cataclysmic problems in years to come, and that, in fact, this problem is even more serious than scientists had anticipated a few years ago. So they have done a great job, I think, in warning the world of what is in front of us, and also giving us some ideas of what we have got to do. And now the message is, politically, are we capable? Are we capable of doing the right thing? And I certainly hope that we are.
Yeah. In the news this week, that the glaciers in Glacier National Park are vanishing faster than they had expected.
That's right. That was my point. But what the scientists are telling us now, you know, we underestimated the speed in which this climate change is taking place and the damage that it will do, which means that in Washington and all over this world, we have got to move very, very aggressively. When Gore came before our committee, he made, and he's very, very knowledgeable on this issue. He's a smart guy. He is knowledgeable on this issue. He deserves a lot of credit through his film, through his lectures, in raising consciousness. And the question is whether we can take on the fossil fuel industry, the big money interests, and move this country in a very, very different direction, away from fossil fuel, into energy efficiency, into sustainable energies. And the good news, Tom, and the really good news, is that we know what we have to do. This is a solvable problem if we have the political courage to move forward. And, by the way, it is a problem that, as we solve it, can create millions of good-paying jobs. It is not true. There will be economic dislocation as we move away from fossil fuels. That's true. But at the end of the day, we will create a heck of a lot more jobs through energy efficiency, through mass transportation, through a new rail system, through solar energy, through wind turbines, through geothermal, if we got our act together.
Indeed. Indeed. This morning I noticed in the Wall Street Journal, they are pointing out that the richest Americans' share of national income has hit a record that has not been seen since just before the Republican Great Depression, with the top 1% of Americans earning 21.2% of all income.
That's right. And compare that with the Wall Street Journal article also pointed out, is that while the wealthiest earners, the top 1%, earned 21.2% of all income, the bottom 50% earned just 12.8%. Top 1%, 21.2%. Bottom 50%, 12.8%. And what this is about, and is consistent with other analyses and studies, is in America today, poverty is increasing, the middle class is shrinking, and the wealthiest people have not had it so good since the 1920s. The Forbes magazine, in fact, a couple of weeks ago, pointed out that while average incomes for the bottom bottom 90% of Americans declined by $172. At that same exact time, you saw a huge increase in the incomes of the top Forbes 400. These people, on average, almost saw a $750 million increase for the people in the top 400.
The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, the middle class is becoming the working poor, and this is basically what we had in the United States from Reconstruction, from 1870 to the beginning of the Great Depression, 1930s, and that 40-50 year period of the New Deal era that started to come to an end with the election of Ronald Reagan is slipping even farther away.
That's right.
What are we going to do about it?
Well, what Forbes told us, and I want people to hear this, is that the wealthiest 400 Americans last year increased their net worth, by $290 billion to up to $1.54 trillion. 400 families worth $1.54 trillion. So what we need is to put an end to economic policies which basically say, oh, the government doesn't have any role. We can trust the multinationals and the wealthy and trickle-down economic theory to provide wealth for all people. That absolutely is not working. Those are theories that are propagated, in fact, by the wealthy and large corporations. And what we need to do is move forward in a number of different directions. For a start, we have got to end the disgrace of the United States being the only major country on earth that does not have a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people. One of the problems, Tom, when we look at the growing inequities in terms of distribution of wealth and income, it's not just that that is immoral to my mind unto itself, but when people have all of this wealth and power, they use it in the political process. They use it through their ownership of the media to make themselves even richer and more powerful. So when you're dealing with healthcare, the problem that we have is pharmaceutical industry, extraordinarily powerful, spending hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars trying to make sure we pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs, while at the same time they get corporate welfare and tax breaks. So what this money does is make these people politically powerful. Their control over the media makes it very hard to get out alternative messages, and we have a lot of work in front of us. Let me just mention a couple of areas where I think Congress is beginning to do the right thing. I know there's a lot of discouragement with Congress from now, and much of it justified, but in some areas, Congress, in fact, is trying to turn the corner, reverse what's been going on for at least the last 6 years. One of the most important pieces of legislation passed in modern times was just passed a few weeks ago and signed by the president, and that is the Higher Education Reconciliation Act. At a time when the cost of college is soaring, when so many young people, and I just spoke to a bunch of them last night, are leaving school deeply, deeply in debt, when a lot of young people are not even thinking about going to college because it is so expensive. What the Congress did is significantly expand and increase funding for Pell Grants. That's important. What it also did is lower interest rates for college loans from 6.8% to 3.4% over a period of 5 years. And also, very significantly, and I hope people listen to this, what Congress did, and I was active, I'm on the committee that helped develop this legislation, is say, if you graduate college or graduate school or medical school or nursing school deeply in debt, as many do, and if you work in the public sector broadly defined, if you work for the government, if you work for a nonprofit, if you work for a hospital, if you work in law enforcement, at the end of 10 years of that public service, your debt will be forgiven, gone, complete. Mm-hmm. Now, what that means is it does two things. It's going to help a lot of middle-class and working-class families be able to better afford college and graduate school. The other thing it does is begin to attract people into public service professions where we desperately need them, whether it's environmental work, whether it's child care, whether it's teaching, whether it's law enforcement, whether it's nursing, whatever it may be. We are encouraging you to get involved in jobs that you really may want to go into, but otherwise could not go into it because you wouldn't have made enough money. So that was a significant piece of legislation. Second area, and I know there's a lot of interest among the listenership of this program, is on veterans' needs. And that bill has not yet been passed. But what has already been passed in the House and Senate, we don't have a conference committee, it hasn't been implemented. implemented yet, will be the largest increase in funding for the Veterans Administration in the history of the VA, and that's something that's long overdue.
Yeah, and a time when it's desperately needed.
Absolutely.
Good. Good news coming out of the Senate. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls at 866-303-2270. You can also drop into our live chat room over at TomHartmann.com or participate in our blog at AirAmerica.com. Go to the Tom Hartmann page. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartmann Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
I don't know when I should stop my feet. I don't know why history.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann Radio Program. Our Brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders with us. His website, sanders.senate.gov. Our website's tomhartmann.com. However you spell it, we'll get you there if you want to drop into our live chat room. Or airamerica.com. We've got a blog posted up there today, and you can comment on it, your thoughts on the day, and also on Al Gore. In the second hour of our program, we will be sharing some audio of Al Gore himself and discussing that topic. And getting into some of the other news of the day as we continue through the... Well, it's anything goes Friday. So, Senator Santa Bernie, ready to take some calls here?
I am ready.
Okay, Chris in Carson, California, listening on K-Talk. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. Tom, I just want to mention real quick that I listened to your show on Wednesday. And what I did is I went on your archives and printed up little tear-offs of the link to that archive because I am a strong union guy. I'm a member of ILWU Local 63 here in L.A. Harbor,
mm-hmm.
And I just want to I appreciate the things that you do. I've made these tear-offs of your link, and I put them around the harbor. Some of these ILWU members have probably seen some of these tear-offs. But getting back
great.
To...
Great, thank you.
Yes, no problem. I just want to say that Senator Sanders is a corporate-owned news media involved in entertaining us rather than educating us. It appears that the news departments of the media, instead of spending money gained from advertising on sending investigative reporters to gather information and disseminate it to the masses, it pretty much feeds us this pablum the way that, in the way of cookie cutter info that competing news agencies all seem to come up with, the exact same BS. And are they involved in frightening us to giving up our rights or, taking over the Constitution? And maybe we need to turn the spotlight on the media.
Well, Chris, I think you're exactly right, and you're raising a very important issue. And obviously the difficulty that we have in turning the spotlight on the media is they own the spotlight. And that's why the work that Tom Hartmann and other progressive radio folks are doing and we're beginning to see on some television stations is terribly, terribly important. But we are very much in the minority in turning the spotlight on it. But your point, Chris, raises an interesting point. Is that when you talk about media, it's not just the presentation of what we consider to be quote-unquote news. It is the huge attempt to deflect interest away from the most important issues facing the American people. A few moments ago, Tom and I talked essentially about the growing disparity between the rich and the poor in this country, the collapse of the middle class, the fact that we're the only country in the world in the industrialized world without a national health care program. How often do we see that reality reflected in the corporate media? Quite the contrary. We have a president of the United States who goes around telling us this economy is doing really, really well. And where is the investigatory reporting to talk about what it means to be in the middle class today when your paycheck is shrinking and you pay more for health care and you can't afford housing, you pay 23% on credit card interest rates? We hear some of it, to be sure, but we certainly don't hear enough. And who made the decision that we have all got to stay up nights worrying about Anna Nicole Smith or Britney Spears or, Jesus, O.J. Simpson is back again, I guess. Somebody makes those decisions that we are sufficiently stupid that we have to stay up nights worrying about Britney Spears, but we should not be worrying about our own kids or our own parents or what's happening to our country. And that's not an accident.
Yeah. And just to put a fine point on that, Bernie, the only news network that has been airing progressive, I'm reluctant to even call Keith Olbermann's show progressive news, and that I don't mean that as a slam on Keith. He's just telling the truth. although he has progressive commentary from time to time, is MSNBC. And Comcast, the cable system here in Portland, Oregon, has just notified their subscribers, I'm one of them, that in the future, starting at the end of this month, if we want to get MSNBC and Keith Olbermann's show and Dan Abrams that follows him and Chris Matthews that precedes him, all of whom have been taking shots at the Bush administration lately, we're going to have to pay extra. It's going to one of the pay-for channels.
Well, we got to take, I mean, I think both Congress, now here's some, Congress has got to take a hard look at things like that, as do the people. And Chris's call is important because it makes the point that media itself is a political issue. It's not just healthcare or the environment or education. How the American people get the news and what news they get is terribly important. To give you an example, I'm going to give you a million examples. General Electric owns NBC. Okay? The president of General Electric, their CEO, Jeff Immelt, some years back said he sees the future of GE in China, China, and China. Okay, in other words, they, you know, part of the corporate outsourcing effort. How often do you going to hear about what trade policy is about on NBC or other media?
Well, and Jack Welch, the former president of GE, was the guy who began the whole process of outsourcing back office stuff to India. And quite proud of the fact that he invented the concept.
You got it. That's
and
right.
So it's what a surprise that, on the other hand, MSNBC is owned by General Electric, and they're the only progressive
seller. Oh, well, I wouldn't go that far. It's progressive.
Yeah. it's like, at some point, we need to have more of a conversation about all of this stuff. We as Americans.
Should.
I mean, this is the thing that needs to be discussed. Okay, we got a solid board totally slammed with calls. We'll get back to them right after the break here. It's our Brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, sanders.senate.gov, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com, 866-303-2270, 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your calls. John in Long Beach, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question for Senator Bernie. Question was, earlier you guys mentioned something about debt cancellation if you work in the public sector for 10 years.
Yep.
When does that go into effect? Because my wife actually graduated about $25,000 in debt, and now she does work for a nonprofit.
It's been effect. It just went into effect. And if she stays in the public sector for the next 10 years, that debt forgiveness would kick in.
That's right. So, John, you need to track down the information on that. You can probably Google it, or you can call your member of Congress, particularly if it's a Democrat. Maybe they'll be able to tell you about it.
Yeah. So that information is available, but it has kicked in right now. So the clock is ticking.
That's great. Gary in Cheyenne, Wyoming, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you for both for what you do. I grew up in the 60s in Nebraska and believed our country was the greatest country in the world. I am since learning that our country isn't quite as principled as I thought it was, as exhibited by Iran Gate and so forth, or Iran-Contra thing. I just picked up the book by Naomi Klein, Shock Doctrine.
Yep.
What the CIA did back in the 60s and 70s and so forth, how much of that is still going on, what is the Congress doing to prevent it from happening again, or is it still happening, or whatever?
Well, Gary, actually, I'm reading that book myself, and it is a very good book. And what it talks about how in the middle of crises, these reactionary economic policies are put into effect. And it discusses, for example, what happens in Chile when the Salvador Allende was overthrown, democratically elected president, overthrown with the help of the CIA. Augusto Pinochet, a vicious dictator, was put into place, ravaged the economy, killed and tortured many, many thousands of people. To answer Gary's question, what we have got to do as a nation is make sure that our country, in fact, follows the democratic principles that we espouse. Unfortunately, historically, in many instances. We have not done it. We're not doing it today. And this is an ongoing issue that the United States Congress has got to look at. One of the many distressing aspects about the Bush presidency is that all over the world, people are asking, what happened to the United States of America, the country we love, the country we looked up to? And our job as citizens is to turn this country around so that once again, we are the leader in the world and people continue to look at us as a model of what kind of society they should have.
Amen. And I want to echo your praise for Naomi Klein's book. She was a guest on the show last week, or the week before last, I guess. And and I've read the book, and it's absolutely brilliant. Joe in Katanning, Pennsylvania, Joe?
Senator Sanders, you have my most sincere respect as an independent. I appreciate what you do for the country.
Thank you, Joe.
With that said, I have a question about your fellow senators and congressmen. We hear an awful lot of talk about what has to be done in order to help our veterans. Our veterans, you cannot say enough about them, how great they are. But we hear a lot of talk. On the other hand, we have a president who comes to Congress and says, give me an open check, a blank check, so I can continue to conduct my war in Iraq. And what does Congress do? They give him that blank check. My question is this. What does Bush have on Congress and the Senate that they just bend over and give it to him? This has me perplexed. It has a lot of people perplexed.
Good question. Let's talk about it, and we'll talk about the war, and we'll talk about veterans' issues. Let me start off by saying that Bush, who tells us year after year how much he loves the veterans, unfortunately, in almost every one of his budgets, has underfunded the needs of the VA. We have veterans on waiting lines all over this country, and we have claims that these veterans have processed which take forever for them to get what they are entitled to. What I want to tell you, Joe, is that I, as a member of the Senate Veterans Committee, I can tell you that a number of us have fought very hard, and I think at the end of the day, we're not there yet, we will have the largest increase in VA funding in the history of the Veterans Administration, not just for the soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan and their needs, but for our older veterans as well. All right. In terms of the war in Iraq, here's the problems that you have. For a start, what the Republicans have done in the Senate in an almost, I believe, an unprecedented way, if I'm not mistaken, is demanded that on all of the important votes, including Iraq, that in order to cease debate, end the filibuster, and get to the vote, they have required us to get 60 votes to end the debate, or else they were going to continue to filibuster it. Frankly, we don't have 60 votes. We maybe have 55, 56 votes to say, we have got to bring our troops home. We've got to help the Iraqi people solve their own problems, but we cannot continue to spend $10 billion a month in Iraq and continue to lose American troops.
But Bernie, with just 40 votes, you could prevent any money at all from going there. I realize there's a huge political price to pay for that.
Well, there is a
political price. Is that the thing stopping them?
But you see, that is the problem. And we don't have the 40 votes for that either. But, Tom, you know, that it essentially does almost what Gingrich tried to do, is to stop government from functioning in terms of the DOD, and people would be paying a very heavy price. So it's very difficult to do. I would say the target right now have got to be on those Republicans, especially those who are coming up for election, who continue to support $10 billion a month in Iraq, while in fact international terrorism becomes more threatening. I think people are observing what's happening to the growth of Al-Qaeda in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, elsewhere in the world. So we need a new direction in terms of how we address the very serious problems of international terrorism. But and that's where I think we are right now.
Indeed. Yeah, and well said. John in Elwood Park, New Jersey. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello, Mr. Sanders.
Yeah.
John Gordon, Elwood Park, New Jersey. I play golf with an extremely right-wing person. He's a friend of a well-known singer. And we talk about the deficit and that. So I said, what about the debt? He has no idea what I'm talking about. And what are we, $10 or $12 trillion in debt?
We're not quite there yet.
How much is this debt service cost?
What is it, 7.7?
I think it's 9.7 and change. It's you guys just raised it up to a $10 trillion ceiling, or there's a proposal to do so.
That's correct. That has been done.
Yeah.
What John is talking about is that very often what the media will talk about is the deficit in a given year is whatever it is this year, $150 billion. add up all of the previous deficits, it is now over $9 trillion, which even in Washington is a hunk of change. And John's point is right. That means that every man, woman, and child in this country is deeply in debt, and this is an issue that has got to be addressed. To my mind, one of the things that we have got to do is take a hard look at tax reform, which says to the very wealthiest people in this country, who in fact have never had it so good, sorry, we are going to rescind at the very least the tax breaks that George W. Bush gave to you, because it's unfair to give you tax breaks and then pass that debt on to our children and grandchildren. We've got to take a hard look at funding in Iraq, at corporate welfare. There are ways that we can lower our national debt without negatively impacting the middle class.
Michael in and which we've done before, by the way, but Michael in like after World War II. Michael in Pebble Beach, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good morning, Senator. I can just give you a brief sketch, but I would like to address the topic of national health care, and I'd appreciate a chance to mail a more detailed discussion to one of your assistants who's concerned about health care. But in brief, the idea is to create a federally supported national HMO. And to make the term HMO really mean what it implied back in the late 20s and early 30s, that is a health maintenance organization. The concept was quickly destroyed here in California due to the state paying for people who needed such health care. And then as soon as they were off the welfare roll, people didn't continue to make the payments, of course, that were required to support the program. but the only obstacle I see to creating an improvement in health care and in the conditions of operating a health care system for all physicians and all medical personnel is the fact that this will not pay off tremendously in a four-year cycle. It will take a generation or so before you see the effects.
Michael, let me just jump in here. Let me just say this on this issue. As I mentioned earlier, we should be ashamed that the United States today is the only nation in the industrialized world that does not guarantee health care to all people as a right. And yet, while we have 47 million uninsured and even more underinsured, while we pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs, we end up spending twice as much per person on health care as the people of any other major country. And it seems to me that, in my view, I believe that we've got to move toward a national health care program. I think it should be a single-payer system. I think it should be administered at the statewide level. I think your point about putting more money into prevention, into disease prevention to keep our people healthy, stronger efforts at primary health care rather than just catastrophic health care is a way that we could save huge sums of money.
Yeah. And if people want to send information to you, they can go to sanders.senate.gov and your
That's
contact
right.
information is there.
Yeah, that's right.
Great. We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. 45 minutes past the hour. Our number, 866-303-2270. Drop into our live chat room at tomhartman.com or airamerica.com for our blog today. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
And welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour, the Tom Hartman Program. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov is website. Karen in St. Petersburg, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Senator Sanders. My question, I found myself yelling at the radio, so I had to call you. When you were speaking with the gentleman who talked about why doesn't Congress stand up to this president, and you answered about the filibuster, and my question is, why not let them do what they're threatening? Why do we always back down? Let them filibuster. It can't be any worse than it is now. It can't be. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I'm so disillusioned with our party and their lack of backbone. It's just it's so it's so disillusioning, it's so disheartening. And I said to the radio, and I'll ask you, why can't we let them go through with their threats? It's like they're still running Congress.
Okay. Clary asked a very good question, and I, in general, agree with you. What a filibuster means, very often, when we are voting in Congress, you're not voting on the war. You're voting whether or not you end debate, and we don't have the 60 votes. And I think what Clara is suggesting is, okay, they want to debate the issue. They want to filibuster. Let them filibuster. Let that debate go on through the night, through the next day, through the next night. Let's have that debate on Iraq, and I would do it on other issues. I think you're right. What I would say in defense of Senator Reid, his problem is that he has an agenda of a number of appropriations bills that he has to get through, educational bills that he has to go, global warming bills, energy bills, and his problem is that there's limited amount of time to move the agenda that he wants to move. So that's the balance that you have to deal with. But I think Clara's point is a good point. I think we did that once, by the way. Some months ago, the Republicans wanted a filibuster. Well, that debate went on all night and into the morning. And I think we should look at that option a lot more, because I think it exposes the Republicans in the Senate as the obstructionists that they are. And I think the more people learn about the issues, the better off we are. So I
Bernie,
agree with Clara.
Bernie, to that point, David Sirota recently wrote a brilliant piece pointing out that the 40 votes, which can sustain a filibuster, that the 40 most conservative senators in the United States Senate represent the smallest states, and they represent a total of 11% of the U.S. population. If we, because each state has two senators, as you know, you're from a small state and you're a senator, if we did away, if we invoked the nuclear option and did away with the filibuster, you, even at 50-50, you would still have a 50% of the Senate would still represent, you know, something like 30% of the U.S. population.
That's an interesting point, which, I mean, would require a lot of thought, because, Tom, what goes around comes around.
Yeah,
and, you know, today we have a one-vote majority. Oh, my God. And tomorrow that may not be the case. But, you know, it's a question that should be pursued. The reality is, in the way the Constitution is designed and the rules of the Senate, it is a very slow-moving body.
Yeah,
sometimes
that is
a good thing if you want to stop something that is bad. That is a bad thing if you want to move forward with a progressive agenda. That's the reality.
Yeah.
But, you know, that what the structure of the Senate should be would require a lot of discussion before we decided upon something, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. Tori in Potrero, California?
Right. Yeah, I'm from Potrero, where Blackwater is trying to make a training camp on 824 acres.
Yeah.
And my question was, I know Henry Waxman, we follow him because he chairs the oversight of the armed services. And I read recently that Joe Lieberman is in charge of that in the Senate. And my question was, how does that affect the Senate with him in that seat and the contractor issue in general?
Well, that's a very good question. And that is an issue. Lieberman is, as I recall, the chair of the Homeland Security Committee. But in general, I think you're going to begin to see, and I certainly would support a very, very, very hard look at all of this private contracting that is going on, by the way, not just in Iraq, but here domestically as well. In the United States, we have a president who wants to substantially cut the number of federal employees and contract them out to private corporations. I just had a meeting here in my own state of Vermont, up in the northern part of the state, with a couple of hundred workers who are very, very worried. These people are working hard. They do a great job in immigration issues, protecting our borders, and they're worried that, you know, you have a president who wants to contract them out to private employers who are lower wages, lower benefits, and so forth and so on. In Iraq, what we do know is that billions of dollars for Iraqi reconstruction is unaccounted for. We know that Halliburton has received billions of dollars in no-bid contracts. Their profits are soaring. We know that this whole thing about Blackwater is a huge issue for a number of areas. It is not just the lack of accountability that they have, and the fact that they're not apparently subjected to any laws. It is whether or not you want a private military to replace sections of the United States government in carrying out our military policies. I don't, and I think this is a hard an issue that we need to take a very, very thorough look at. I am not, to say the least, a fan of this privatization. I want to see the military regain military functions and not contract them out.
Right. Bernie, just in quick response to something that was said earlier, the folks in the chat room are talking about and whatnot. When you're talking about the Senate paying, or the Democrats in the Senate paying a political price for forcing the Republicans to filibuster, you're not so concerned about who's going to get elected or not elected. And frankly, you're in favor of the filibusters going forward. What you're talking about is the fact that Harry Reid will not then have the time to bring to the floor pieces of legislation that he actually wants to get passed.
But look, the truth of the matter is, there are a number. I mean, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of issues. They come up here every week. Well, if you bring them onto the floor, it takes time to debate them. It takes time to get them out of committee and so forth and so on. So that's the difficult problem, how you move an agenda forward, but at the same time you expose the Republicans for being the objective.
Yeah, I think when people heard you say political price, they thought you meant, oh, my God, we've got to worry about the elections. And really what you're talking about is we're trying to get stuff done here.
Right. That's the dilemma he has.
I get it. Okay, Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
All right, my pleasure, Tom. Take care.
Great talking with you. Sanders.senate.gov if you want to check out Bernie's website. 57 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. Al Gore.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Viagra for your brain. This is Air America Radio.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. A special shout-out to all our friends down in San Diego, KLSD. Stacy Taylor and I, he does a morning show down there. I was doing the morning show here on AM 620 KPOJ in Portland this morning. And I'm not sure if it's a radio first, but it's certainly a radio unusual. We were on each other's show at the same time, and I called his show, and we both put each other on the air, so we were simulcasting two different cities as a way of saying hi to all the folks who were out there strongly arguing, and arguing is not even the right word. Saying that there really should be progressive talk radio in San Diego and how much they like it and how much they want it to stay. And talking about the whole idea of a buy-in, where Stacy was telling us about how people in San Diego were actually going, they made up these cards, they're going around to sponsors of the radio station and saying, you know, I buy from you because you advertise in this radio station. I think it's a marvelous thing. And also a call out to all our folks in Eugene, Oregon, also where we're live and on the air. And you know, progressive talk radio growing in some places, being challenged in others, it's working out. We need to change the subject here. We need a national healing in the United States. Al Gore just won the Nobel Peace Prize. This is a guy who now has the stature worldwide of a Nelson Mandela. We need a reconciliation commission in the United States. There's been a lot of talk, and I've been one of the people who's been talking about it, about prosecuting the war criminals of the Bush administration. Perhaps the way to do it is the way that the South Africans did it, with a reconciliation commission. You admit that you did wrong, and we will forgive you. But let's have it on the record that it was wrong and that it will never happen again. Or perhaps there should be absolute prosecutions and it should be a Nuremberg-style trial. Perhaps we should let the Iraqis have a voice in that. But in any case, I believe that Al Gore is our Nelson Mandela right now. And I signed the petition over at draftgore.com yesterday, and I know there's a bunch of different algore.org sites and whatnot, and who knows who's running them all and whatnot. They did run an ad in the New York Times, full-page ad in the New York Times a couple days ago. And Ed Henry, I believe it is, on CNN is reporting that Al Gore had been seriously thinking of jumping into the Democratic race, but is now concerned that Hillary Clinton has gained so much momentum and has seized so much of the machinery of the Democratic Party that it's impossible to stop her. I don't share that opinion. I think that the way that Al Gore should do it, frankly, and I may be wrong on this, but, you know, who knows, is that he should reach out to one of the Democratic candidates, whether it's Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, John Edwards, Dennis Kucinich, pretty much anybody but Mike Gravel, in my opinion. He should reach out to one of the candidates and say, I'm selecting you right now as my vice presidential candidate and throwing my hat into the race. And just announce, this is the ticket. It's going to be a Gore Clinton ticket. It's going to be a Gore Edwards ticket. It's going to be a Gore Obama ticket or whatever it may be. And I think he'd have the thing wrapped up in a week. But that's what it's going to take. Now, the downside to this whole conversation is the Mercury went retrograde yesterday, and so for the next 3 weeks, anything that you start is probably going to fail, according to all my astrology knowledgeable friends. Of course, I'm not one of those. I don't know much about it other than that I have one publisher who actually won't answer his phone whenever Mercury is retrograde. It doesn't talk business. It's kind of strange. But so anyhow, Al Gore winning the Nobel Peace Prize. And Al Gore is not just about global warming. Al Gore, in January 05, the 16th of January 05, gave an incredible speech. I want to share some pieces of it with you during this segment and the next, and then we're just, you know, we're going to take your calls for the rest of the day. We do have two guests on in the third hour, but take your calls as well on our Anything Goes Friday. But I wanted you to hear Al Gore.
One of the other ways the administration has tried to control the flow of information has been by consistently resorting to the language and politics of fear in order to short-circuit the debate and drive its agenda forward without regard to the evidence. Fear drives out reason. Fear suppresses the politics of discourse and opens the door to the politics of destruction. The founders of our country faced dire threats. If they failed in their endeavors, they would have been hung as traitors. The very existence of our country was at risk. Yet in the teeth of those dangers, they insisted on establishing the full Bill of Rights. Is our Congress today in more danger than were their predecessors when the British Army was marching on the Capitol? Is the world more dangerous than when we faced an ideological enemy with tens of thousands of nuclear missiles ready to be launched on a moment's notice to completely annihilate the country? It is simply an insult to those who came before us and sacrificed so much on our behalf to imply that we have more to be fearful of than they did. And yet they faithfully protected our freedoms, and now it's up to us to do the very same thing.
This is Al Gore. This is from about a year and a half ago. And, you know, really going after the administration and calling them out and telling the truth. And I think that that's an extraordinary thing. We're faced with an embarrassment of riches. We have some extraordinary candidates, and Al Gore, I think, should be one of them. Al Gore, as I jokingly refer to, although it's not a joke, the only president of the United States who never served as the president of the United States. He continues.
We have a duty as Americans to defend our citizens' right, not only to life, but also to liberty and the pursuit of happiness. It is therefore vital in our current circumstances that immediate steps be taken to safeguard our Constitution against the present danger posed by the intrusive overreaching on the part of the executive branch and the president's apparent belief that he need not live under the rule of law. I endorse the words of Bob Barr when he said...
Now, let me just add, Bob Barr, who's been on this program before, the Republican congressman from Georgia who led the impeachment of Gore's boss, Bill Clinton, from the floor of the House of Representatives. Here, Al Gore is going to quote Bob Barr.
I quote, "The president has dared the American people to do something about it for the sake of the Constitution. I hope they will. A special counsel should be immediately appointed by the Attorney General to remedy the obvious conflict of interest that prevents him from investigating what many believe are serious violations of law by the President."
Anybody who thinks that a Gore administration would be a wimped-out administration, I think, needs to listen very carefully to this speech.
Republican as well as Democratic members of Congress should support the bipartisan call of the Liberty Coalition for the appointment of this special counsel to pursue the criminal issues raised by the warrantless wiretapping of Americans by the president, and it should be a political issue in any race, regardless of party, section of the country, House of Congress, or anyone who opposes the appointment of a special counsel under these dangerous circumstances when our Constitution is at risk. Secondly, new whistleblower protection should immediately be established for members of the executive branch who report evidence of wrongdoing, especially where it involves abuse of authority in the sensitive areas of national security. Third, both houses of Congress should, of course, hold comprehensive and not just superficial hearings into these serious allegations of criminal behavior on the part of the president, and they should follow the evidence wherever it leads. Fourth, the extensive new powers requested by the executive branch in its proposal to extend and enlarge the Patriot Act should under no circumstances be granted unless and until there are adequate and enforceable safeguards to protect the Constitution and the rights of the American people against the kinds of abuses that have so recently been revealed.
Yeah, Al Gore, a barn burner of a speech. Now, I'll share just a little bit more of it with you when we come back from the break in just a moment. But this is, just won the Nobel Peace Prize, and already the right-wing slime machine has kicked into high gear. Fox News attacking him, all the right-wing blogs attacking him. Why? Because they're afraid of him. Same reason they're attacking John Edwards right now. They're afraid of him. The same reason that the only guy that got, that the Republicans spent $1 million to try to take down in campaign ads in the Iowa Democratic primaries, the Club for Votes spent $1 million against Howard Dean. They were afraid of him. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
Some days a glimpse of stocking looked on to something shocking. Now heaven knows.
That's Anything Goes Friday. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Is that the... Who's coming through that door? Is that Higgins? Ah! It's my cat. My crazed cat. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Nick in Cliffside Park, New Jersey. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Tom. A couple of questions and a suggestion. When did he give that speech? Where did he give that speech? Is it on the web?
He gave that speech on the 16th of January, 2005, and I don't remember where he gave it. He did give a speech here in Portland. I introduced him, spent some time with him beforehand, and moderated a question and answer with him afterwards, and it was his global warming presentation. I don't think this was that. I'm not sure where. I've got it on my computer. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't remember where I got it from.
Well, I'll do the research, but you do also put it up on your website where and when he gave it. And what I want to do.
It's 16 January 2005.
Right, 16 January 2005 is put that up on Google or some site that will broadcast the whole thing on the web in its entirety, so we can all download it and make 100 DVD copies each. You probably
there's probably already the video of it over on YouTube if you just search for it. But what do you think, Nick, about Al Gore saying, picking out, for example, John Edwards and saying, okay, it's going to be a Gore Edwards ticket, and I'm telling you right now, I'm going to appoint Bill Richardson as Secretary of State. He's been a great ambassador. I'm going to appoint Hillary Clinton as the Secretary of Trade or whatever. I'm going to appoint, and just start naming the candidates, or Joe Biden, Secretary of State, and he certainly has the experience in foreign relations, and just lay the whole thing out and just roll in there with the whole thing, right? Here's the package, guys. Take it or leave it.
A Gore candidacy would be a slam dunk. I think we have to do everything we can to create a brokered convention in 2008 so that he can be drafted.
Which means that all of the candidates have to commit to stay in all the way to the end, and that you have to hope that none of them gets enough votes to go into the convention with enough, so it's not brokered.
That's our only shot, because clearly the Republicans want to run against Hillary. They're doing everything they can to build her candidacy and to raise funds on the prospects of her candidacy.
And have been doing so for several years.
Exactly.
And the mainstream media as well. Yeah, absolutely. Good point, Nick. Thank you very much for the call. Here's a little bit more of Al Gore on that, from that speech on the 16th of January of 2005.
Fifth. Any telecommunications company that has provided the government with access to private information concerning the communications of Americans without a proper warrant should immediately cease and desist their complicity in this apparently illegal invasion of the privacy of American citizens. Freedom of communication is an essential prerequisite for the restoration of the health of our democracy. It is particularly important that the freedom of the Internet be protected against either the encroachment of government or efforts at control by large media conglomerates. The future of our democracy depends on it. I mentioned that along with cause for concern, there is reason for hope. As I stand here today, I am filled with optimism that America is on the eve of a golden age in which the vitality of our democracy will be reestablished by the people and will flourish more vibrantly than ever. Indeed, I can feel it in this hall. As Dr. King once said, perhaps a new spirit is rising among us. If it is, let us trace its movements and pray that our own inner being may be sensitive to its guidance, for we are deeply in need of a new way beyond the darkness that seems so close around us. Thank you very much.
That was Al Gore back on the 16th of January, 2005. 1-866-303-2270, your telephone number. Jackie in Prairie Bush, Washington. Hey, Jackie.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah.
Hello?
I am.
Okay,
and you're on the air.
You know, I've recently become a fan of progressive talk radios and agree with you guys almost all the time except for one single issue. I agree that Blackwater and any other private contracting company that does things that they're not supposed to be doing, like going out and shooting people, they should be held accountable, absolutely. But my son's been missing for nearly a year with four other people, and nobody seems to be able to do anything about it. And
Is he a private contractor?
Yes, he was. But he's not any longer because he hasn't been working. Yeah, he was kidnapped in Iraq. You can find out all the information on my website.
I'm so sorry to hear that. What's your website?
TheMissing5.com, the number 5.
TheMissingDigit5.com, okay.
TheMissing5.com, yes.
Yeah, see, and that's this is another argument against private contractors, Jackie. If he had been a member of the military, you'd have the whole government looking for him.
Well, the government says they're looking for him because he's an ex-vet. He was in the Marine Corps for 4 years.
Yeah.
Before he went back over and joined.
Jackie, I'm sorry that we're out of time, but I wish you the very best, and you know, we got your website out there, and our prayers are with you and your son. Thanks for calling. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
And I wonder, yes, I wonder.
Anything Goes Friday, although Al Gore seems to be the topic du jour, having won the Nobel Peace Prize. Will he hop into the Democratic race? If so, how? And, of course, there's a lot of other things that we've talked about today and a lot of folks who've been sitting here on hold for a long, long time. So let's get to the phone. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Bob in Brisbane, California. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Tom. You know, I wanted to ask Bernie when he was on about the investigation into 9/11. And
yeah, well, I'm sorry, Bob, but Bernie's not here. If anybody else has questions for Bernie, he's gone. Ask the questions for Bernie in the first hour. After that, talk to me. Sean in Santa Cruz. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Yes. I was somewhat concerned about the fact that if we do attack Iran, no one talks about the dangers that our fleet will face in the Persian Gulf.
Right.
And
it will be a massive disaster. It has certainly the potential to be a massive disaster. And frankly, I think that that's exactly what the neocons want. We had Norman Podhoretz or however you say it, on this program, what, 3-4 weeks ago, and I said, did you really say, sir, and did you really mean in context that if we attacked Iran, it would create a wave of hatred against America all across the world that would make our invasion of Iraq look like a picnic? And he said, yes, and that's what I meant, and I think it would be a good thing. They want to stir this thing up. They want to have their so-called clash of civilizations. It's a carry-on from Ann Coulter yesterday or the day before. I guess it was 3 days ago now on Fox News, or not on Fox News, on Danny Deutsch's show, talking on CNBC, talking about how America would be a better country if all the Jews became Christians. I mean, there is just an absolute bizarre worldview out there that is shared by these guys, and it's an incredibly destructive one to America. And we need to call it out. We need to call it out. Steve in Mountain View, California. Hey, Steve.
Oh, hey, Tom. It's going to sound a little weird, but it is Anything Goes Friday. I'm going to suggest that George Bush was hired by Saudi Arabia to attack Iraq in return to make that possible. Saudi Arabia cooperated by staging 9/11.
Interesting theory. First of all, I wouldn't go so far as to say that the government of Saudi Arabia had anything to do with 9/11, although, you know, the official story is that 14 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis. Saudi Arabia certainly benefited tremendously from Bush's invasion of Iraq. Their oil revenue has just about tripled, and at a time when they really needed the money. So, you know, you can draw from that whatever you want. I'm not going to call you crazy, Steve. It's an interesting one to put out there. Matt in Napa, California. Hey, Matt.
Morning, Tom. I just wanted to talk kind of the general discussion about 9/11 in our society.
Yeah, or even a specific one is fine with me. Just, you know, if it's a question for me and not for Bernie, go for it.
Yeah. You know, if you call the radio shows or anybody these days and you want to discuss it at all, you have to be pigeonholed into one category or another. If you question it at all, people say, well, then you've come to the conclusion that the Bush administration did it. And it just seems like that's somewhat pathological that we can't at least have an open discussion, that there are some people out there that are just interested in discussing it. And
I agree with you. I think it's a shame, and I think that there's frankly an agenda here. I think that one of the ways that the Bush administration, because obviously the Bush administration had some complicity with 9/11. The question is, what was that complicity? And it appears at the obvious and surface level, given that we know from news reports and admissions by the State Department that George W. Bush had more than 50 specific warnings before 9/11 that something like that was going to happen, that just months before he had been moved onto an aircraft carrier in the Mediterranean when he was supposed to be in Italy for an international trade conference because Condi Rice had been told that Al-Qaeda, that Osama bin Laden was going to hijack a plane and fly it into the hotel he was staying in to assassinate him. And so they moved him onto an aircraft carrier. I mean, this is all a matter of public record. The idea that they would have no idea that somebody could hijack planes, and then the memo he got, you know, clearly they knew that something was up. What they knew, how much they knew, whether they had anything to do with it, all those questions in my mind are completely open. But obviously they knew something was up, which then raises the question, why did they, A, not do anything about it, or B, to take it even further, why did they stand so many things down? Why did they shut so many people up? Was the Colleen Rowley thing, I mean, you know, was this a conspiracy? Was this incompetence? I don't know the answers to any of these questions, Matt, but I think that they're all good, honest questions that need to be asked and answered. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, just, you know, with the 9/11 truth people, all across the country we're trying to organize debates, you know, with official story supporters, and we're just not having any luck, you know.
We're trying to do it on this show.
Localities, and I know that you tried to organize something. I just kind of encourage you to try with us once again, and if we can, you know.
We have a standing invitation, and I've talked with several of the folks over at 911truth.org. We have a standing invitation. If anybody who wants to put forward any theory whatsoever, or simply ask questions about, you know, the contest the official story. If you can find somebody who will defend the official story on this program, we'll put you all on together, and I think it'll make a great show. I have been unsuccessful, and we have tried, I'm telling you, we have tried, in finding anybody who will defend the official story in a debate that I would essentially moderate, because frankly, I don't feel qualified to take either side of the argument. And I would love to hear somebody, people who have really educated themselves on both sides of this argument, duke it out. I'd love to hear it. I think it would make good radio. I think it would be very informative. I think it would be a good public service. And our contact information, you know, contact David Poole, our producer. His email address and contact information is on our website. It's not that we've closed any doors, Matt. It's that nobody has come forward with it. So good luck and go for it, you know, by all means. Kim in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Kim, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. I like your idea about Al Gore. I signed up for Draft Gore. I'm all for him. My problem with Al Gore is that I think he's lacking in ambition. And I think Hillary is incredibly ambitious. And I don't think that the good of the country is enough for her to say, sure, I'll be the VP. Or any of these other people, they have too big an ego at this point. And I think the problem is that Al Gore just doesn't, that's why he didn't get it the first time. He just didn't have the ambition to fight it to the end.
Well, actually, he did get it the first time, and he did fight it to the end. He took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and he fought it all the way to the Supreme Court. His family's home, he was living at the Naval Observatory, which is the vice president's home. It's where Cheney lives now. And throughout that entire three-week period, more or less, there, where they had the guys, you know, John Bolton was down, and John Roberts were down in Florida banging on the windows, yelling, you know, stop the vote count. At the same time, you had a whole bunch of people 24/7 surrounding the Naval Observatory, the vice president's home, with bullhorns 24 hours a day, shouting at Al Gore's children, who were terrified of this stuff, get out of Dick Cheney's house. I mean, you know, he absolutely went through hell, and he took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And once the Supreme Court rules against you, the only choice you have is to lead an armed rebellion.
Right.
That's it.
Right. Right.
And he has pointed that out, and he said, you know, I wasn't ready to lead an armed rebellion, so I just, you know, I had to. But he fought this. Unlike John Kerry, who rolled over in 24 hours or 48 hours, Al Gore fought this thing all the way to the end. And you know, and I respect him for it, and I would. You know, I would vote for him in a heartbeat for it, and I really think, although I agree with you, in all probability, if he went to Hillary Clinton and said, if you'll be VP, we'll announce a joint candidacy, she would probably say no. She would fight him out for it. But I suspect that if he went to John Edwards or if he went to Barack Obama and said, if you'll be my VP, I'll go for it, or flip it around, you know, I'll be your VP. But let's put this ticket together and get Al Gore into government. I think there's a possibility. Maybe I'm a dreamer. I don't know. I've been listening to too much John Lennon. It's possible. Gene in Hillsboro. Hey, Gene, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was going to ask if you heard anything about this plan by the Army Corps of Engineers to depopulate the Gulf Coast.
No.
Oh, crap. Because I'm looking at...
I'm
well,
sorry,
I know
Gene.
I know it sounds a little weird, but I'm looking at an article on... from the Guardian UK about buying up homes in Bay St. Louis.
Gene, I just don't know the details of it. I'm sorry, I can't address it. People can check it out. I'm sure that they can Google it. It may be, I mean, eminent domain happens all the time. It might be that somebody's building an Air Force base or something. I just don't know the details. Kyle in San Rafael. Hey, Kyle.
Hi, Tom. First of all, I want to set the table. I am a middle-class union guy who did not vote for Al Gore. I went with Nader in 2000. I was angry at Al Gore at the time. I didn't feel that he was a good candidate. You're so right to play that speech, the Martin Luther King speech from 2005. That was where I felt the blocks inside me shifting dramatically. That speech basically delineated every major flaw in the Bush administration of this country for the last 5 years. And at that point, I said to myself, I could get behind Al Gore now. He's learned something in the last 5 years.
Yeah. And like you, I also voted for Ralph Nader in 2000. And
yes,
it wasn't because I was opposed to Al Gore. Actually, my wife voted for Al Gore. It was because we lived in Vermont, and it was a blue state, and I knew that it wasn't going to hurt the Democratic Party, and I wanted the Green Party to get the matching funds for the next election. And,
exactly.
And I liked Ralph Nader. I liked what he had to say. But and I don't buy the story that Ralph Nader cost Gore the election. The election
no,
was
I don't,
stolen
I don't buy that
by, the, by the Supreme Court.
I agree completely. And, you know, being in here in California, I had the same luxury of preference. But I want to say this, if I may, about your suggestion that Gore reach out. And I think that at this point, if he went to any of the candidates that you mentioned, and you did mention Dennis Kucinich, I personally would like to see a Gore Kucinich ticket because I think that would give incredible moral weight.
I agree with you, Kyle. I agree with you. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. Ellen
Renner is with us for the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Hey, Ellen.
Hey, yeah, Turkey is beginning to really get kind of inflamed here, and it is not yet the Armenian issue that is coming up.
Oh, Turkey. Uh-huh. Okay.
It is also the fact that Turkey's prime minister said today that his country is not going to be deterred by any possible negative diplomatic consequences if they decide to go into the Iraq to deal with what they consider the Kurdish rebels.
Whoa.
Yeah.
They're apparently not all that concerned about their, or they've written off any chance of their becoming a member of the European Union?
Well, I think they have because the European Union, I don't think, is going to really accept an Islamic country despite the fact that it is, you know, it's really not a religious country, but I think that they are, they're willing to, you know, they're playing hardball, and they're playing hardball also with the genocide bill that has two co-sponsors, Chris Dodd and Hillary Clinton, although Hillary Clinton last week apparently kind of backed away from her support of it in front of the Boston Globe editorial board.
Yeah. Well, they recalled their ambassador, didn't they, Turkey?
Just for 10 days.
I see. So it's sort of like we're showing you that we're really upset, but we're not going to try and kick your butt.
Right. However, This issue of them going into northern Iraq could really complicate things.
Yeah, interesting.
CRU, the group on ethics in Washington, has asked a federal judge to ask the White House to preserve all tapes of its backup email system. And the White House, of course, won't even confirm whether they have those backup tapes.
So are they asserting that they don't, or are they refusing to say whether they do or they don't?
They won't say whether they do or they don't.
And yet there's a federal law that requires them to archive all communications within the executive branch. So they're saying that they're not even going to respond to whether or not they're in compliance with a federal law?
Well, they are not going to say whether they have maintained email going back to the beginning of the administration as required by law. Exactly.
Right. Yeah, the Presidential Records Act was passed, what, in the Ford administration, was it? I mean, it's some time ago.
Right. Now, and as you know, this president tried to change who would have access to the records after he leaves the administration.
Right. But he was unsuccessful. I mean, the Presidential Records Act still stands, and this administration is in violation.
Well, but he basically gave an executive order amending it. Now, that should not affect the fact that they have these email records. He may just try and stonewall them, saying that it's privilege.
This guy really thinks he's a king, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
This is incredible. This is incredible. We need a special prosecutor so bad right now. Is that we were just hearing a speech from Al Gore from a year and a half ago where he's saying, we need a special prosecutor appointed right now to look into the crimes of this administration. He
but
is
then,
so right.
Then you look at what's happening at the CIA, where they did have the office, essentially the inspector general, and now the head of the CIA wants to go after the inspector general.
Right, because the head of the CIA is a Bush appointee, and he's a political hack. You're talking about General Hayden, right?
That's right.
General Michael Hayden, the former head of the NSA, the guy who in his testimony before Congress didn't realize that the Fourth Amendment says that you have to have probable cause, not just a reasonable suspicion, and in order to get a warrant. It's incredible. It was just absolutely incredible. I remember hearing his testimony and his going back and forth with, I think it was David Gregory on that thing, and the reporter was, no, wait a minute, you have to have probable cause. And he's like, no, it doesn't say that in the Fourth Amendment. Wait a minute, this is one of the guys who's listening in on our phone conversations, and he doesn't know the Fourth Amendment, which deals with privacy, doesn't know what it says. It's only one sentence. I mean, it's a... But don't get me started, Ellen. Anyhow, what else is going on in Washington, D.C.?
Okay, very interesting. Before Alberto Gonzalez left, he had gotten appointed 11 interim U.S. attorneys. They expire today. There's also some other U.S. attorneys that are serving. Apparently there's four more. Then the question is, how long are they going to serve? Does this actually go back to the court system? Now you understand these have been served without any Senate confirmation, without any Senate anything.
And so what's going to happen here? I've heard two stories. One that the courts are going to push back, and the other that the courts are going to rubber stamp them.
I think we're not going to know until the courts do what they're going to do.
Right.
But I think both scenarios are possible since you only have one or the other.
Yeah, but today is the rollover date.
That's right.
Interesting. Yeah, okay.
One other interesting thing, remember all of that happened about all our port security and all of this and how mm-hmm. people got really nervous about this? Well, it turns out, and I can't figure out the politics, whether it's Joe Lieberman sort of trying to help Susan Collins and her run for re-election, or this is just going on anyway, but they are going to have a hearing on this next Tuesday on what's called the Safe Port Act, and we'll be talking about how they're dealing with freight and who's going to be running the ports, et cetera. That should actually be, it looks like a sleeper, but I think it should actually be something well worth hearing because it really has to do with whether they're really dealing with any security issues in this country or whether they're just dealing with them in Iraq so they don't come here.
Yeah. Real quick question for you. I know that you provide news. You're on, like you are on with me, with a lot of right-wing talk show hosts. Is there much buzz out there about a Gore candidacy for the Democratic
presidency? Well, they're trying to pump up the Gore candidacy, thank you for bringing this up because I was going to mention it to you. They must all be dealing with the same talking points this morning. Somebody must have gotten up at 4 and sent it to them because they're all saying Gore doesn't deserve the Peace Prize and he's not making peace and oh my gosh.
Oh, really? So, see, this is the thing. I mean, they went after Howard Dean because they were afraid of him. They went after Ed Muskie back in the Nixon time because they were afraid of him. They're going after John Edwards. They're going after Al Gore. These are the ones that they should be afraid of. Ellen Ratter, TalkRadioNews.com. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio. The Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio, where smart people get their news.
And welcome back. Happy Friday. Shabbat Shalom. Have a great TGIF, whatever it may be for you. Ann Coulter, recently, talking with Danny Deutsch. I mention this because I want to take it to a larger picture, but here's first of all, the clip of Ann Coulter.
You said we should just throw Judaism away and we should all be Christians then, or
yeah.
Really?
Well, it's a lot easier. So it's kind of a fast track.
Now, by the way, she's speaking with Danny Deutsch, who is Jewish.
Really?
You have to obey.
You can't possibly believe that. You can't possibly. You're too educated. You can't. Are you like my father?
You know what Christianity is. We believe your religion, but you have to obey.
No. But
we have the fast track program.
Sure.
We just want Jews to be perfected as they.
Want me to reset you?
Yeah, no, that's what Christianity is. We believe the Old Testament, but ours is more like Federal Express.
Yeah. We just want the Jews to be perfected, says Ann Coulter. The National Jewish Democratic Council, the NJDC, has called on the media to stop inviting Ann Coulter on as a guest commentator. And this would be in those forums where she is generally not challenged, I would assume. She very often is a guest commentator on national television. And strongly condemned her comments that Jews should be, quote, perfected, end quote, by accepting the New Testament, and that Americans would be better off if Judaism were thrown away and all Americans were Christian. Media Matters, by the way, has the entire video. You can check it out over at MediaMatters.org. You know, what's particularly bizarre about this is that Ann Coulter's comments don't come in a vacuum. Just a few years back, and I wrote a piece about this morning, which you will find over at CommonDreams.org. It just was put up, and it's also on our blog over at AirAmerica.com. Justice Antonin Scalia said something not all that different, frankly, in a synagogue on November 23rd, 2004. He said that in Europe, religion-neutral leaders almost publicly never use the word God. He pointed out that the word God is just not used, by and large, by politicians in Europe the way it is by politicians here in the United States. And he said, he asked the rhetorical question, and this is quoting Scalia himself. He said, did it turn out that by reason of the separation of church and state, the Jews were safer in Europe than they were in the United States of America? I don't think so. Apparently, Scalia doesn't realize that one of the main reasons that European leaders, particularly German political leaders, don't use the word God so much is because it was precisely the merging of church and state. It was precisely the governmental consensus that everybody should be a Christian that led to the Holocaust. I mean, just go back and look at the pictures. Germany declared an official state. There was a Reichsbishop, a state bishop. His name was Mueller. He was put into place by Adolf Hitler in 1933. He was invested. He was supposed to be the first official bishop, like the first pope of the thousand years of peace that Hitler was going to bring to the world by making sure everybody was Christian. Which brings up one of the main reasons almost always overlooked by modern-day commentators, both left and right, that the founders and framers were so careful to separate church and state. They didn't want religion to be corrupted by government. This was the big debate between Jefferson and Madison. Jefferson was concerned that the religious zealots, which was mostly the Puritans in Massachusetts, would take control of government, as they had in Massachusetts, and start burning women at the stake again and hanging them for being witches, among other things. Madison, on the other hand, thought, you know, those crazies in Massachusetts, that's never going to happen here. What we have to worry about is if the government ever starts giving churches money, then the churches will be corrupted and Christianity will no longer be a pure religion. That was Madison's concern. Madison was a Christian. Jefferson was a deist. He believed in some great creator, and he thought that Jesus was a great prophet. In fact, he took the New Testament, cut out all the miracles, and just, you know, included what he thought were the actual words of Jesus, and it's been continuously in print for 200 years. It's called the Jefferson Bible, the first four books of the New Testament. But what they didn't want was a theocratic state. And that's what Ann Coulter is promoting. That's what Antonin Scalia is promoting, or was promoting, in this speech before a synagogue in 2004. And that's, frankly, what I think we need to be concerned about. It's among other things. So there's a lot on the table. From Ann Coulter to Antonin Scalia to Al Gore to the Nobel Peace Prize to the ongoing crimes against the United States and against democracy by the Bush administration. Sid in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Sid, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling, Sid. Hi, Sid, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, thank you. I think because Mercury's retrograde in Scorpio, I had an epiphany.
Okay.
I think I'm going to vote for Gore. I've been thinking about it because I don't think we've ever had an Aries president. I think one thing about him is that he will become more open to the truth about global warming. And I'd love to see a Gore Kucinich, you know, together.
Yeah. I think frankly, the Gore-Edwards ticket would be the strongest one, but I would have no objections to a Gore Kucinich ticket. I think, though, that Gore Edwards, or for that matter, Gore Obama, could really take it. But good point, Sid, and thank you for calling. And, yeah, Mercury went retrograde yesterday, so look out, everybody. Chris in Cave Creek, Arizona, and thanks for the call, Sid. What's up, Chris?
Hi, Tom. I sent you an email, by the way, on your Tom Hartman address, if you ever get a chance to look at it. But okay. I wanted to get your reaction. You know, due to the fixation of the media on Hillary and Barack Obama, what do we do as citizens? Well, I suppose in a general term, how do we combat the corporate media in general and get them to do as we wish? Or in this case, though, how do we get them to give more attention to John Edwards and possibly Al Gore if he's going to run, but how in the world can we hope to overcome these people? I don't want to say there's no hope, but this is
brute force. I mean, you know, this is really the only way to do it. It's to contribute to their campaign. It's to, you know, participate in the Draft Gore movement. Or it's to go to johnedwards.com. I'm assuming is the website and donate money. I've done that four, maybe five times now. It's you know, raising the awareness. I mean, Edwards is very clear. He's not taking PAC money. He's not taking corporate contributions of any sort, and it puts him at somewhat of a disadvantage. But I share your concern, and I'll tell you where it's coming from. It's because the mainstream corporate media is very concerned that John Edwards is enough of a populist that he will hearken back to Teddy Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt and start busting up the big conglomerates. He spent his life taking on huge, in some cases, multi and transnational corporations, and which is the media in the United States right now. And they are very concerned. The last person on earth that they want as president is John Edwards. And so they're ignoring him. And if you're ignored in the mainstream media, that's death. And so, you know, you just have to make him unignorable, I guess. Diane in San Francisco. Hey, Diane.
Hi, Tom. I love your show. I learn something every day. My question is, if Al Gore really did fight as hard as he could, why didn't he sign up on that paperwork that the House of Representatives put forth about minorities being shut out? Didn't they just need one signature?
To challenge
Yeah, I don't know the exact specifics, but I remember in Michael Moore's movie, you know, they showed.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Right.
You'd have to ask Al Gore that, and I haven't, and I don't know that anybody has, but I believe I know that was after the Supreme Court had ruled. It was a done deal.
I see.
It certainly should be investigated, but I think that outside the context of deciding the presidential race, because it just would have, well, I don't know. I can't take Al Gore's position on that because I just don't know it. But Diane, thank you for raising the question. It's a good one, and if he runs for president, I guarantee you it will come up. Steve in Illinois, just a few seconds before a break here. Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to make a general statement about people who run for office, and I can kind of see Al Gore's position. I am on the PTA. I'm a headroom parent in my daughter's class. I decided to start a website for the local Democrats. And I've got, like, I must get 10 calls every day from crazy people. I mean, just all over the map. I can't imagine what it would be like to run on that kind of a level.
Yeah, no, it's incredible the density of the attacks that you get. And I can tell you, being in the media, it's the same thing. I mean, I get 400 or 500 emails a day. I get death threats. I get, you know, you wouldn't believe the voicemail and the emails we get. Yeah, it comes with the territory. At a certain point, you just say, in fact, I had 3 bullet holes in the door of my car. At a certain point, you just say, hey, that's life. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
Zao yi fo na xin li ken ya la qing.
Oh, it's our Anything Goes Friday. And I just mentioned before the break, and everybody in the chat room was like, what? It's been, I guess, probably a year since I told this story. When Louise and I first started doing Progressive Talk Radio, living back in Vermont back 5 years ago, started this show, one morning I went out and the back window of my car was missing. I thought somebody walked by with a baseball bat and knocked the thing in. I took it down to a local replace your glass place. They gave me the car back with the new window in it and said, did you notice that there's three bullet holes in your door? And so anyhow, when we finally moved here to Oregon, I mentioned it on the air. And Tom Dwyer, who is an advertiser on AM 620 KPOJ, right here in Portland, replaced, buffed out the bullet holes. And so TomDwyer.com. Tom, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Great. Thank you for taking the bullet holes out of my door.
Yeah, it took a little more than a buff job to do that, but...
yeah, I can imagine.
I'm proud to unshoot you, as I said.
Yeah, thank you very much. You guys are doing something really innovative at Tom Dwyer Automotive. It's TomDwyer.com, by the way, and for folks in Portland. But this is something that I wanted to just have mentioned on the air. You're doing a carbon-neutral program for your customers. You're an auto repair shop.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, I've always felt that I'm kind of a parasite on a polluting industry, and so... you know, in an attempt to do something to redeem myself, I think that may be part of it. But, you know, I'm really proud of what we do in general, and I built my business trying to be an innovator and not just follow what other people were doing. And I've always been pretty sensitive to the impact that the industry has on, you know, on the planet. And, you know, even though we're only 5% of the world's population, we represent about 45% of the carbon emissions, and that's pretty nasty.
So if I take my car in, and I do, to get it fixed over at Tom Dwyer, you're going to give me a carbon offset, or it's going to work out that way,
well,
that I get a...
Basically, what we have going is you get on our website and link to a website that's TDASICarbonneutral.org. And basically, we got together with Bonneville Environmental Foundation, which is a local nonprofit. They were actually the inventors of the concept of green tags. And we worked together with them to set up a facility where that our clients or anybody, for that matter, can get on the site and purchase green tags to offset their carbon emissions. And once they've done that, then we basically get a list of the people that have signed up, and we offer them a 10% labor discount for a year, plus four seasonal discounts that we offer that pretty much are going to offset the cost that they have in the program.
So we don't
pay for the upfront, but generally over a period of a year, we pretty much are providing the cost of that program.
Right. So by having my car serviced with you, I'm becoming carbon neutral. I think that's an absolutely great thing, and you're a real innovator for it. And just real quickly, Tom, I want to start doing this with other advertisers on other affiliate stations all around the country. You've been advertising on KPOJ for a couple of years. Getting good results?
Yes, you know, very much so. You know, pretty much, I think, the first case is you got to have a good service or product to offer. No matter how much you advertise, if your value's not there, people aren't going to respond. And we're a small company, and word of mouth has traditionally been our primary source of new clients. And, you know, over the 26 years I've been here, I've tried quite a few different modes of advertising, and I have done some radio in the past, and it was unsuccessful. And, you know, I'm a faithful listener to both your, you know, local and national shows, and I found that I would go out of my way to support the national and the local advertisers whenever I could. And I thought, well, God, you know, if I do this, other people probably feel the same way. And so I figured I'd give it a whirl. And it's been a good investment in many ways. You know, first of all, a lot of our existing clients have fed back to me that, you know, they hear the ads and they're very supportive. And it's a good feeling to know that you're, you know, giving something to your existing clients. It's also nice to know that the new clients that we gain, you know, they come in and they share my views, and it's just nice to work for people that you respect and in general are pretty together people. And
That's great.
From the bean counter perspective, you know, I grounded a little bit of the numbers, and we've gained about a 14% client base growth and about 12% gross sales directly tracked to people that, you know, have come from KPOJ and from Air America in general.
That's
so
great.
It's just
That's
nice to
great.
Establish relationships with progressive clients. I mean, it just makes me feel good.
Yep, and we're glad that you're doing it. Tom Dwyer, TomDwyer.com, Tom Dwyer Automotive in Portland, Oregon. Tom, thanks a lot for being with us
thank
today.
Thank you, Tom, for giving me sanity in this sea of whatever you want to call it.
Of general madness. Thanks a lot, Tom. Great talking with you today. And we will be having other advertisers from other stations on in the future. Ann in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Ann, got about a half a minute before we're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. Quick one?
Hi, Tom. I love you. I think you're the best educated and the easiest to listen to progressive talk radio talk show host. What I want to talk to you about is Al Gore. My memory serves, I'm 60 years old, and I remember him wanting to sell off our strategic oil reserves for pennies on the dollar. I was appalled at the time, and I never could vote for him because I don't understand why he would do such a thing. Can you help me with that?
Well, he also picks Joe Lieberman as his running mate. I have a feeling that Al Gore has been through an awful lot in the last 7 years specifically, and that many of his political positions have, I know many of his political positions have changed, and I'm willing to cut him some slack on mistakes he's made in the past, and I don't know what his position is right now on the Strategic Oil Reserve. Yeah, again, if he gets into the race, these are the questions that need to be asked of him. Thank you for your call, though. 27 minutes past the hour. Four minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Anything goes Friday. 1-866-303-2270. Our telephone number. And Mike in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, thanks for all you do. Hey, the first lie that we got these people on, and we should have stuck them on, was that Dick Cheney was not from Texas. He picked himself to be vice president. He made a quick trip to Wyoming to register to vote. He had a Texas driver's license. Lynn Cheney was on the Texas Literacy Council. The whole bit. We could have stopped it then. What, and I don't know, which amendment to the Constitution prohibits the president and vice president being from the same state?
You know, I don't know. I'd have to go back and read the Constitution. It may well be in Article 1. Well, I just can't take time to do it on the fly.
Because they took that to court.
Or no, it would be Article 2 is the part of the Constitution that deals with the presidency, and if it's in there, that's probably where it would be.
Well, so they took it to court, and they said they didn't have jurisdiction, so it stopped.
Yeah, interesting. Mike, let me go ahead.
By the way, your other caller said somebody, or your guest said somebody woke up at 4:30 in the morning. I'm convinced here in Atlanta, Neil Bort's show starts Eastern time, 8:30. He says he gets up and starts doing his research about 4 or 5 in the morning. I'm convinced he's the one that writes the talking points that everybody else, since he's got them on his Neil's News by about 6 or 7 in the morning, that all these other guys go to what he's written, and that's what you hear for the rest of the day.
Yeah, now I get this stuff in the mail, Mike. It's coming from the Republican National Committee. There's stuff that comes out of Fox News. There's stuff that comes out of a PR firm in Washington, D.C. I wouldn't give Neil that much credit, frankly. He's just echoing what everybody else is saying. But, point made. Greta in Monterey, California, listening on KRXA. Hey, Greta.
Hi. Yesterday you were talking about the gun control. And you talked about, you were talking about psychiatrists and psychologists making decisions. And I would say that they have proven themselves, to be the most crazy and the most corruptible group of people around. And that they've proven themselves recently that they are out there denying our health benefits to Iraqi veterans who come back, saying that they had mental health issues before they went into Iraq, and then they're denying the benefits.
Yeah.
And I had
Greta, let me just separate these issues for a second. What we were talking about yesterday was not psychiatrists or psychologists deciding that people can't have guns. It was a law that says that if you have been before a judge who is not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, if you have been before a judge and that judge has involuntarily, in other words, against your will, committed you to an institution because you are a threat to yourself or others, then you do not qualify to carry a concealed weapon. You may still buy a hunting rifle. You can't carry a concealed weapon. And that's a whole different thing from putting it all in the hands of psychiatrists and psychologists. And I share your condemnation of the policy of the Veterans Administration. It's an informal policy, but it is happening. And Larry Scott from VAWatchdog.org has talked about it here many times on this program, of saying that vets who come back with PTSD actually had psychiatric problems before they went over and that these were pre-existing conditions and therefore they're not covered. I share your condemnation of that. But I'm telling you, that's a policy that's being driven by politicians, Republicans in the Veterans Administration, specifically Jim Nicholson, who just left as the head. He was a multimillionaire Republican donor from Colorado that Bush put in charge of the VA, who had basically no experience in Veterans Affairs. So that's the issue.
Well, I had a friend who in the 60s was involuntarily put in an institution and received shock treatment. And he said his problems at the time were simply he was taking drugs and his mother didn't like it.
Yeah.
And 30 years later, he was still suffering from having had those shock treatments.
No, I absolutely understand, Greta, and in fact, I knew of a similar case back in the 60s. And I'd say psychiatry and psychology have come a long way from the 60s, and B, in some ways, they probably haven't. And I could give you a long list of times that doctors have screwed up and left sponges in people, but it doesn't mean that we stop doing surgery. I'm not going to become a Scientologist over this. And so Corinne in Laguna Beach, California. Hey, Corinne.
Hi, it's actually Corinne, Tom. But,
Corinne, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say that this is regarding the Armenian Genocide Resolution of Chris Dodds.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It may be wishful thinking, but it seems like this could actually be a strategic move to get Turkey to cut off military ties and stop supporting the Iraq war through, you know, letting our cargo go through there and through their port.
Oh, that's interesting. You're suggesting that perhaps the Democrats are supporting this in order to upset Turkey enough that Turkey will no longer help the Bush administration transport our troops and our supplies into Iraq so that our troops can get shot at in Iraq.
Well, also because
this would be a backdoor way of slowing down or stopping the war.
Exactly, because France passed a similar resolution and Turkey cut off all military ties.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting. Thank you for that.
Thank you. I hope I'm not giving them too much credit.
Yeah. Well, you never know. You never know. I appreciate the insight, though. I'm telling you, we have the smartest listeners on Earth on this show. George in San Jose, California. Hey, Joe. George.
Hey, Tom. Love your show. I am one of them crazy liberals that is hooked on talk radio and a C-SPAN junkie. And I saw this program when you were, I believe you were in Germany a couple weeks ago.
About a month ago, yeah.
Right. And I saw this program on that Friday that was recorded on August 17th, 07. And it was in reference to this 9/11 conspiracy issue.
Right.
And it had Ed Asner. Well, it was sponsored by a radio station, I believe, in San Diego. But I might not be right on that. But Ed Asner introduced this guy, and what he was a janitor that worked in one of the towers.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I love the program. He explained everything from step one to step Z. I mean, it was incredible the way he explained what all really happened there. And I really wish you could, I don't know, I'm not computer savvy, but I believe...
No, I know it's out there on YouTube, and I've been intending to look for it, because I've had a couple of people email me about it. I just haven't had the time. Ed's a friend of mine, and a brilliant guy, and a absolutely committed progressive and activist, somebody who I... And his wife, Cindy, in particular, a brilliant activist who I have a lot of respect for. And I'm gonna track it down, George. Thanks for reminding me. Jana in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Jana.
Hey, Tom. Hi. Listen, I'm calling to urge all the sane listeners out there to put aside hair splitting and act today to beg Al Gore and Tipper to run, because we have created so many enemies out there That is the really, really big problem that looms over us, on top of all the other ones, that only Al Gore has the international clout and experience to undo the damage and pull us back from the brink of World War III, and could possibly even unite the world around one global issue that transcends national and state boundaries.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jonna. In fact, I opened the show talking, or the second hour of the show, talking about how Al Gore, having won the Nobel Peace Prize, is sort of our Nelson Mandela now, and we need a national reconciliation. We need a national healing, and perhaps even a commission of reconciliation, that rather than trying to put Bush and Cheney and these guys in jail, at least exposing their crimes and forgiving them, perhaps even. But he's somebody who has the stature nationally and internationally, particularly given that he has now this Nobel Peace Prize to do it. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Scott in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Scott.
Hi. Your last call was right on the button. I mean, I did actually call their office today, and, you know, as an aside, I said, you know, everybody, I'm sure, has asked you to do this, but to urge, you know, Al Gore to run again. But the reason I'm calling...
How do you call Al Gore's office, Scott?
It's on the web. He holds an office actually right now for like his speaking engagements and things like that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, if you go on Google and you go to Al Gore, he has an office. Him and Tipper Gore have an office that they maintain.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay. That wasn't the reason why I was calling them. I was calling for a different reason. But one of the things that I'm trying to push through the Richardson campaign right now is an initiative to put in writing. This is for any Democratic candidate of your choice. To put in writing, basically, when they take office, that this is just one of many things. It's the Equalization of Powers Act of 2008 is what I'm calling it, and I wrote it out. And basically, it would require anybody called from, let's say, the executive branch or an employee or a federal official, that if they were called before Congress, that they would have to go. And it would also get rid of warrantless wiretaps and all the other stuff, but essentially put it in writing, not say, like for Obama, I'm going to have a more transparent government. It would require them to put in writing all these things that they want to change and turn back the constitutional changes that.
Let's go back to three co-equal branches of government, with the legislative branch, with the one that is closest to the people, being the first among equals, as it is in the Constitution. I mean, really, basically, what you're suggesting is we should just go back to the Constitution as it is. And although it's a shame that we may have to do it legislatively. Gee, passing laws to follow the Constitution. What a novel idea. But, Scott, good on you. Good on you. It's a great start. 45 minutes past the hour. Coming up next, the guy who was running for president on the Green Party ticket last time around, David Cobb, good friend in the studio here with us. Stick around.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. Meet Stephanie Miller in Phoenix on Saturday the 27th. Details at 1480kphx.com.
Red roses too, I see them blue, for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, special thanks to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Harbin, to Chris Lopresto, and Lauren Kirshner at Air America in New York, to Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives for our websites, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thanks so much. In the studio with me now is former presidential candidate, the Green Party ticket, and all-around good guy, David Cobb. David, welcome to the program.
Howdy, Tom. It's a pleasure always to be on.
Great, great having you here with us, David. And you are in town because you're with Democracy Unlimited of Humboldt County right now, DUHC.org. And you guys have passed a resolution there, I'm going to let you tell the story, but basically taking the person out of corporate personhood. And you're here in Portland because tonight from 7 to 9 at the First Unitarian Universalist Church, which I think pretty much everybody in Portland knows where it is, the main Unitarian church, you're going to be doing a gig on how to make this happen here in Portland. And you're going around the country on how to make this happen in any community. So anybody listening, this is relevant stuff.
Absolutely, Tom. The reality is that corporations today, as you well know, are claiming constitutional rights. And by being able to claim those political and civil rights that only naturally should accrue to human beings, they've been able to overturn democratically enacted laws at the local, state, and even federal level that try to control their conduct. I'm very proud that in Humboldt County, we passed a law that says no corporate money in our local elections and no corporation can claim constitutional rights in an effort to overturn this law. In essence, Tom, building into the law a direct challenge to the whole legal doctrine that a corporation should be able to claim those political and civil rights. And, Tom, we're not the only community. There are already seven other communities across this country who have started to do it. We are being inundated with requests and calls from other communities to try to figure out how to do the same thing. And I'm here to tell you, Tom, and the listeners of this program across this country, there is a movement happening. There is a movement of ordinary citizens rolling up their sleeves because they want to rule their own lives. They don't want unelected and unaccountable corporate CEOs to be able to dictate the terms of their existence. And I am very proud to be here in Portland at the First Unitarian Church at 12th and Main tonight at 7 o'clock. And want to invite listeners, if you want to figure out and strategize with us how to do something similar, check us out on the web, as you said.
DUHC.org.
Absolutely. And let's start doing the work necessary to take our country back.
Yeah, David, the corporate personhood. I mean, I've written about this. We've talked. We've shared.
That's how we got to know each other.
Yeah, we've shared the platform on this thing for years now. For years, we've been fighting this fight together, along with another large group of good people.
And it's getting larger.
Yeah. Why? You know, the quickie, the elevator speech about why. You know, what corporate personhood is and why. It's so important to, you know, stop it.
Well, Tom,
the First, Fourth, Fifth Amendment. The kind of...
Exactly. I mean, remember that corporate personhood is not just a bit of legal trivia. It is a core foundational legal doctrine. If you as a human being claim that your constitutional rights are being violated, that is a serious claim and one which the government and our court system and our entire society ought to take seriously. You have your rights to free speech, to free assembly, all the other core constitutional rights by virtue of your human dignity. Because you're a human being and because in our constitutional framework, we hold that to be sacred.
I have the right under the Fourth Amendment to privacy, to conceal things. Under the First Amendment, I have the right to say anything I want, including lying to people. If Louise says, how do you think I look in this dress, I can say something that I might not.
And as your friend, I would urge you to tell her that she looks great.
That's right. A corporation, frankly, shouldn't have those rights.
Tom, why should they? This is concentrated capital. It's just money. The idea that we would give political and civil rights that people had to fight, struggle, and die for, the fact that we would allow these kinds of protections against our elected representatives to these corporate actors, these economic institutions, is insanity. And the reality is, Tom, that is one of the legal bedrocks that have allowed the corporation to become the dominant institution of our time.
And this has been one of the core things of the Federalist Society, which is now stacked about half of our federal judiciary, is they're all about corporate personhood.
Absolutely.
They do workshops on it around the country, how to make it work for you.
And that's right. The Federalist Society and the wealthy elite are funding rich think tanks to try to utilize this legal doctrine, corporate CEOs can do it.
And this is what John Roberts was doing for a living.
He was doing it for a living. And this is why, look, folks, the Supreme Court matters. And what else matters is building a movement that will be so powerful, so broad, and so deep that the courts can no longer ignore the voice of the people. Think of it this way, Tom. Did segregation end because in Brown versus Board of Education, a great argument was made and those justices made a decision? Or was it ended by the Anti-Lynching Society? Was segregation dismantled by a powerful movement of ordinary people who challenged the social legal system?
Yeah, it was the people. And in fact, I would argue that Brown versus Board of Education wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the people.
Absolutely.
The Supreme
right.
Court doesn't lead, it follows.
The law follows culture, Tom. And
that's
at the
right.
end of the day, ordinary folks have enormous power. And that power can be exercised as simply as writing letters to the editor, calling talk radio stations, and not just this one, but the right wing as well, and starting to build the drumbeat, a cultural literacy, if you will. Corporations are not people. They do not deserve constitutional rights. And if we're going to have a democracy where we the people rule, we are going to have to overturn that illegitimate legal doctrine.
Amen. As you have done, or you've taken steps towards doing in Humboldt County,
absolutely.
California.
Absolutely. Remember, we pass a law, and you can do it in your community, too. Contact us at DUHC.org. We want to help you do it.
That's Democracy Unlimited of Humboldt County, DUHC.org. There's also a whole bunch of other great organizations that they're working on.
The Program on Corporations Law,
Democracy,
POCLAD, CELDEF, Reclaim Democracy. The list goes on, and it's growing.
Yeah, amen. And there's links, by the way, off TomHartmann.com. I've got a whole website on corporate personhood.
Yes, you do.
To all of those organizations as well, so people can track that down. David Cobb, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for letting me on, Tom.
Coming up Monday, Mark Morano is going to be here telling us how wrong Al Gore is about global warming. That should be entertaining. Clyde Prestowitz is dropping by. Is America committing economic suicide? Plus, as always, the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartmann Program, your radio support group for We the People. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartmann archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.